Welcome to the Prosperity Podcast, fresh, alternative personal finance talk for independent thinkers who prosper outside of Wall Street. Here's your host, best-selling author, Kim D.H. Butler, and no BS money guy, Todd Strobel.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Prosperity Podcast. This is No BS Money Guy, Todd Strobel. Once again, we have our resident expert and co-host, best-selling financial author, Kim Butler, with us. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Todd. Happy to be here today.
Super. Today, we're going to be talking about the difference between economics and politics, or economics versus politics, if you will. And I'm just going to set this up. I've recently gone through a divorce after 28 years back out in the dating world. And what I've realized is that so much of my time is spent in kind of the cluster or the small percentage of people who really kind of agree with the way I think or we think or however, and really talk about prosperity economics. Dating again has allowed me to get out and experience a wider variety of the world, I guess you would say. And it's amazing how many discussions that are completely off limits because they're supposedly involving politics. And I think the number one is Obamacare. And if we try to talk about Obamacare, I don't know, in some cases it's being slanderous to the president. And I certainly, you know, I guess I would say he made an effort to address a problem. I'm just not so sure that bureaucracy is the answer to the problem that we're facing. But if we can get out of the idea that the discussions we're having is about politics and it's more about economics. And today I really want to kind of go into the difference between those two so that we can say, hey, it's not a political discussion to say, how do we pay for something? What's your opinion, Kim?
Well, it is sad how limited our conversations are because of this whole term called politically correct. And frankly, I don't think we should be politically correct. Sometimes offending somebody is okay because, now, of course, you don't be rude about this, but we need to have discussions that are consequential. And so much of our discussions are surfacey because we don't ever want to express our opinion because we're afraid of offending somebody. And I think as a society and as families, we would do so much better if we just went ahead and shared our thoughts. And maybe we do offend somebody because they think differently. That's okay. It's okay to learn to agree to disagree. And yet so much of our conversation is surfacey because we don't.
Super. Well, I'm going to jump in and I'm referring to a website now, which is Mises, Mises.org. And it defines economics as the science, which are the laws of nature that determine production and distribution of wealth, versus politics, which is the art of ruling. Any comments on that?
So say it again, economics, production, distribution.
Economics is a science. Politics is an art. Economics concerns the immutable laws of nature that determine production and distribution of wealth. In other words, this is like gravity when you're talking about economics. Politics is an art, and it's the art of ruling people. So it's more subjective, whereas economics, we're talking about defined principles. And again, if we go back to this discussion of Obamacare, there's nothing wrong with insuring everyone as long as you can explain where the money's going to come from to pay for it. And to me, that's the argument that we haven't made yet.
Absolutely. Well, it's so interesting when the word economics is brought up, most people just immediately shut down. And I think it's because we all hated our economics class in college. I'm sure some people didn't, but I know I do. And now here I'm using the word prosperity economics. And I love what you said about it being a science versus politics being an art. And there are so many times in the political discussions, if we would make one simple change in our language, it would make so clear what the issues are at hand. And that changes this. Instead of using the word the government, if we used the taxpayers, Because the only way the government has any money is when people pay tax. And if we were clear that no matter what it was that the government was offering, if we were clear that it was us, the taxpayers, that were contributing our tax dollars so that the government could provide whatever it is that they're talking about, then we would have a much better understanding of the real resources that are at play and where they're coming from.
Got it. So again, if we go back to the same question of economics, again, this is talks about building wealth through wealth creation versus politics, which is building wealth through mandatory income redistribution. What do you think about that?
Wow. Well, that's part of why I used the word economics in our language about what we do, this term prosperity economics, because it is economic science and economic law that enables us as individuals to build wealth through creation. It is the only way that real wealth is built. And the reason that we can say that is we know, and studies have proven this over and over, that when somebody is given something, either by redistribution or because of some other method, even some charitable things sometimes, when somebody is given something, they do not treat it as carefully as if they created it or built it or developed it themselves. You can just use a million examples: rental homes, rental cars, gifts that people give to others. Those are all not treated as well as cars that you own, homes that you own, something that you bought for yourself. And so wealth creation must begin with skin in the game, whether it's hourly or dollar wise or some commitment, and including learning. And it builds on that. And when it does, it's a solid foundation. When wealth is given to us, it is very temporary.
And I would also add that when wealth is given, freedom is taken in exchange.
Yes, that's very true, because it's a trade-off. There's something there for it. And our government is, I think, as time has progressed, doing more and more of that. And it's happening slowly. It's kind of like the pot that's boiling the frogs. If you put the frogs in the water and you turn the heat on and it comes to a slow boil, they'll just sit in there and die because it's such a slow incremental change. They're not aware of it. Whereas if you dump them into boiling water, they would get out. They would just jump back out. And that's what's happening to us as human beings, and in particular, Americans in our society today.
One of the first jobs that I had out of college, the managers all got company cars. And it was in an industry where you really didn't even need a car, I mean, to perform your job. But the managers all got company cars. And it was a great benefit. And I asked one time, why is it that people all get these company cars? And they said, you know, we've reduced turnover by 70% by paying people less and giving them a company car.
Wow.
I mean, you just become dependent that you're driving a company car, and changing jobs would mean I have to get my car back.
Gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, it is truly important that we focus on the fifth principle of prosperity, which is to control. And when we give up control, we are giving up a part of ourselves. Giving up control is like giving up a freedom. And that's why I love those seven principles so much. And of course, those are available on our website, partnersforprosperity.com. The seven principles of prosperity can be applied to work. They can be applied to our health. They can, of course, be applied to our money. They can be applied to our relationships. Hey, Todd, there you go. That's what you can use for your dating game. The seven principles of prosperity.
I'll have to try something, because I'm not doing too good with what I'm doing now. So I find more people to argue with than to date. But but let's go back to this Obamacare thing, which was the source of my argument. And most people out there probably have never had a chance to purchase health insurance on a company wide level. But I'll just explain to you as a quick example how it works, because in my opinion, this is what we're experiencing with Obamacare. Well, if you have, say, 100, I think the last time I bought it, I had probably 70 to 100 employees, and I went out shopping for health insurance, and they start out with what's called a census. So they look at, here's the ages of your employees. That's pretty much what they look at, maybe a male-female breakdown, something like that. And they come up with a price. And that's your price for year one. So at year one, it costs X dollars per employee that you pay monthly. The employee can pay part, the employer can pay part, doesn't really matter. But at the end of the year one, you look and they say, okay, here's the deal. We've collected $100,000 in premiums from you, and your particular group has cost X in benefits. Now, if that number is more than $100,000, then guess what? The next year, everybody has to pay more in order to try to bring those numbers back online. And in my opinion, I think that's exactly what we're experiencing with Obamacare. Is all of a sudden, a lot of people who didn't have health insurance are being told, yes, you must purchase health insurance, which fortunately, some of those are very healthy people who don't have health insurance because they really didn't want to participate in the healthcare system. But some of those people are on dialysis and have some long-term conditions that very well could cost $1 million a year. So unless the taxpayers are going to foot the entire bill, which when we say taxpayer, we're also talking about the people who are working now, which is us, the same people who are buying the insurance, a year from now or 5 years from now, the same thing's going to happen as what happened to my company, and everybody has to start bearing the burden of that cost. And by not allowing any type of a selection process, and by saying every insurance company has to insure every person, have we really benefited ourselves overall?
Well, it is such a good question, a great discussion for people to have and be thinking about and turning our brains on, because what that example that you just went through, what that explains is how so many of the government programs provide value, is that it's a throw everybody in the pot and let everybody pay for everybody's. And it's not rewarding people for good behavior, health-wise, in this case I'm speaking of. And so it's something that we need to be talking about. We need to be more aware of. We'll want to be continuing the discussion. And I realize that Obamacare is constantly in the news and there's still a lot of courts out in the various states as to whether it's going to go forward or not. But going back to that control, going back to the first principle of prosperity, which is to think, let's think about what's going on there so that we can really be conscious of the decisions that we're making and not just be the sheep that are following along and being led potentially, frankly, right off the cliff.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you have a $50,000 a year job and stop working and have a $50,000 credit card in your pocket, according to the way we run our government, you have no problem.
That's scary. What happens in year two?
That's the question. And we're not having a political discussion to say what happens in year two, or, you know, to say the fact that Social Security has loaned the money that is supposed to be paying people back to the government and the baby boomers are retiring. That's not a political discussion. That's an economic discussion. And we deserve answers, not saying that we aren't allowed to ask the questions.
That's absolutely right. And I love this distinction of bringing things back to the economics and the actual tracing of the money, where it comes from, where it goes to, and to be okay with the conversations and to start asking our families these questions and to start thinking through these things rather than taking money and making anything about money be a political discussion, because it's not. We need to be having economic discussions, because our children, the people that are in high school and college right now, have not been given the education around money that they need, because it always gets thrown into the political realm when it's not. It's an economic discussion. It's a science, and there's numbers behind it. It's very provable, and it's absolutely something that we should feel free talking about, whether we're at the dinner table or the coffee table with friends.
Speaking of economics and learning, I think you've got a gift for our listeners today, don't you?
I do, and I am so happy to share this. This is, if you will, my story, but it's done in a way that you will learn a lot from. And so you can take 30 years of adult wisdom that I've created not only just in my own life, but in watching clients' lives, and put it into a book called Financial Planning Has Failed. So this is available as an immediate download. It's at partnersforprosperity.com/ebook. That's partners, the number four, prosperity.com/ebook. You get an immediate download of the book Financial Planning Has Failed. It's about 60 pages. And it talks about why financial planning has failed. And more importantly than that, it talks about what to do about it.
Super. Well, just kind of wrapping up again, we're going to encourage everybody to stick to their economic guns, not get shut down by the politically correct questions. Question your own budget. Question any budget that affects your personal income. And I can't think of anything that affects our income more than the conversation of healthcare and the conversation of taxes. And I think we have a right to ask questions, and we have a right to have our questions answered. Anything you want to add, Kim?
Well, I love asking questions. I think they're the most valuable thing that we can do to make progress. And I did not used to be good at it. And so for those of you that feel like, oh, I don't have any questions, turn your brain on, get some questions going. They're a great way to start conversations and to really get at the heart of the matter quickly.
Super. Well, once again, we encourage you to visit the website, partners, the number four, prosperity.com, and /ebook is the free gift for you. This is No BS Money Guy Todd Strobel for the Prosperity Podcast. Once again, thanks so much, Kim Butler.
Thank you for listening to the Prosperity Podcast. To take control of your money and have it work for you, visit us at partnersforprosperity.com. If you liked this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review.